Well, hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Run From Zero podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Krismer. So glad you're here. This is episode 22, and today I'm joined by Todd and David to discuss week three of the series we're in, walking through the life and story of Joseph. Today on this podcast, we discuss a ton around the application of some of Joseph's circumstances, right? It revolves around the message from Sunday. So if you've not yet listened to that message, be sure to pause this podcast, go back and listen to that message, and then continue on, as it's going to help this conversation make a whole lot more sense to you. Like I said, on today's episode, we dig into some application around this idea of the waiting that Joseph experienced, a couple of years worth of waiting throughout the course of his life in less than ideal circumstances. And we talk a lot about what we today can learn from that. And then we dig heavy into application around serving others, following in the footsteps of Joseph. And we land the plane with talking about Love Your Neighbor Week, which is this week, and how you can be engaged in serving our community all throughout the Black Hills, even as soon as today. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, hey guys, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back for me I guess, because you guys have been here. Well,
Tom, I was out last week.
It feels like it's been a while. Yep. As I was prepping this morning, I was like, it's been a couple of weeks. So glad to be back.
I've lost track of all time.
Yeah. It seems to happen in
what month is it? I don't know where I've been or where I'm going.
What we do know is that people don't like waiting.
Yeah,
that's something we were talking about over the weekend here, and it got me thinking about things that we do regularly, like personally, that require some waiting in public spaces or whatever. What for you guys? What are there typical experiences you have, or common, a couple times a year, even experiences you have where you find yourself waiting for something and it just bothers you?
Give the caveat of we always try to eliminate as much wait as possible.
Yes.
But if there is a good restaurant, there can be times I'd be willing to wait, knowing, put your name in early, but it's still going to take a little bit. And then also like amusement parks, or if you're going to do anything that's fun, it's just going to have lines.
Yep.
But man, is it awesome when you go to a place like that and there's hardly any lines and you can just do whatever ride you want. That is a glorious day.
Yeah. Growing up, we lived for a few years near a Six Flags in Illinois, in Gurnee, Illinois. And we would every once in a while go on like rainy days when no one else was there. Like people would not go on a rainy day. But as soon as it clears up, it's like, you could just ride the ride on repeat because there is no line. So you could literally not even have to get off the ride. You just keep on going. And I remember that being a blast. It's like best case.
We did that at one amusement park. We just stayed and we're like, well, they're not like closing down the rides. No. It's just a little like sprinkle, but people are like, we're out.
Yeah, that's the best.
And we're like, well, we'll stick around.
I'm trying to think of things that I'm willing to wait in line for.
Not shocking.
Yeah. The other day it was interesting. I had to fly out and I stood in the longest security line I've ever stood in at Rapid City Airport. You guys know, when you're walking up into you get up above the stairs, you're on the main level, you're about to walk towards security. The security line was all the way back to almost the couches. I've never seen it that way. And so the whole zigzag was all full. The pre-check people all full. Everything was full. It was like, this is nuts. So I hadn't been there. But no, I almost every time, if I have to wait, I'm just going to go. In my mind, I'm like, I have an alternative thing I can go do that is much as okay as whatever I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
If I have to wait, I will wait. If I have to go through security. Okay. So, there's that stuff that's obvious, but I strategize way too much about how to not wait.
Mm-hmm. That's really fun.
I know.
I was thinking about oil changes. That's something you have to kind of wait for. Like you can't really get up and do much, but I find myself always doing something. Like I'll drop the car, I'll sit and I'll bring my laptop and I'll work on something, or I'll, If there's something close by that I can walk to, I'll schedule it around like a lunch and I'll drop the car, walk, go grab lunch, walk back, and then the car's done. So I was thinking about that one.
You would make fun of me. I won't even wait then. I'll drop the car off the night before.
That's funny.
Yeah. I don't want to wait. Yeah. Like it's, I know I got a problem.
But then you have to schedule like, okay, who's going to drive me back if I drop the car?
Fine, but I'm not waiting.
So you would rather be without your car?
Yeah.
For the next day?
That's funny.
See, that's more inconvenient for me, I feel like.
I'm just
have all these extra cars. You can be like, I'll use this.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
I have friends and family.
Okay. Right? Yeah, there you go.
And
I'm just messing.
But well, actually, so what, the way it usually plays out, so then the next day, I just go pick up the vehicle when I've got time to pick it up.
Yeah.
I'm not like sitting there waiting on them to tell me when I can get my car. I'm like, no, I'll get it when I can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll have someone drop me off or... otherwise I'll bum a ride to the office and bum a ride to
there you go. One thing, David, you learned about me last year was I don't like waiting in airports.
Absolutely not. You do not. We got there just in time. And when I say just in time,
a little after time, maybe some would say
when we got to the gate, we walked onto the airplane.
It's a little stressful for David over there. That's
well, that
living
was
on
not,
the edge.
We had a plan, and then we had a plan, like a lunch plan before the flight. Then there was a plan B because that lunch plan wasn't going to work. So we hit the plan B. And I'm kind of watching my watch the whole time, knowing that I don't like sitting in airports anyway. Yeah. So I'm like, you know, I'm definitely not going to miss the flight, but I want to try to push that boundary. For me, ideal is if I can get to the gate like 15 minutes before boarding begins. Because that means I've got probably 25 or 30 minutes until I'm actually boarding, and that's perfect. I don't like sitting there for a long amount of time. So, yeah, we did. I mean, I had a snag in security. There were a couple of bags in front of me that had to get fully checked, and that delayed us a little bit more. So it was like a walking on. Like, luckily, the gate agent held it a bit, but I was the last person on the plane because David made it through a little faster than I was, and, like, door closed behind me sort of thing. It was a tight window. Would not suggest.
So didn't they wrap you up in security? Something was going on in security or something?
Well, it was one of those funny
something
things
happened.
Where there were two or three bags right in front of me like that were getting checked.
Okay.
So there was like a whole bag check post security, and mine got grabbed with those as a bag check, but they couldn't, the person right in front of me, because I'm watching the watch. I told you, hey, go ahead, like, get to the gate.
Yeah, it's like, well, I was going to actually go and say, hey, he's coming. We're coming. We're here. Like,
yeah. So the bag right in front of me, they're trying to check the bag, but of course they need to find the person who owns the bag before they can open it up and check it. So they're like calling out, whose bag is this? And no one is saying anything.
Nice.
Mine's right behind there. So it takes like 2 or 3 minutes for them to find the person, go through the bag. The funny part of it was when they get my bag, they put it on the table where they go to check it. Doesn't even check it, doesn't even set it on the table, just hands it to me and I go. So, like, I waited the whole thing to get my bag checked, the whole time to get my bag checked, and they didn't even check it.
They didn't even check it.
Then I hustled down. But anyways, yeah, we are a people that do not like to wait for things.
Yeah.
Airports are that for me.
I mentioned it in the sermon. Like, I've thoroughly loved the whole checking into a hotel early and just walking into my room. Whoever invented that, thank you.
I didn't even think about rental cars, but rental cars are maybe the worst.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting in line to check out a rental car, like, now that we don't have to do that by doing the whole online thing, like just go pick up the keys, get in the car and leave.
Yeah,
man, that's like life changing.
Yep.
I think that's good.
You have to think it's crazy, like, how much farther back in your life you have to think about, like, when's the last time I really had to wait because there's no other options.
Oh, I can think of one but I didn't do it. This was funny. So Hayden, our oldest, got a car, and so he hadn't done a process with the vehicle ever. It was one of those things his parents were like, oh yeah, we haven't done this. Let's kind of help you out and walk you through this a little bit. So Katie did, and she talked like the amount of waiting at the registrar's office, like the county.
Yes.
And there's those are examples.
And it's like there's no way around. There are certain things like that we are not letting you around. You have to wait.
Yeah. Even there, though, they've got the thing where you can like get in line.
I
don't know if that's near one.
Yep.
But hospitals, too, you don't really have an option.
Oh, boy. Sure. Yeah, we've got some stories there. Yep. But it was a good good reminder. I loved the Houston airport story of like, yeah, you're not waiting. Yep. We're just wasting your time.
Yep. And I do believe better. That's happened at so many airports. Now I feel like, man, we're walking forever to get to the baggage
claim. It's all on purpose.
Yep. Oh, I was like, that makes sense.
That's why at the Rapid City Airport, it's just so you know, it's always going to feel like it takes a long time.
Because it's so quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just walking down the hallway. Yeah. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. It was a good reminder. Jumping into the story of Joseph. He spent a lot of his life waiting in less than ideal circumstances. Like, we'll get even more into his outlook on that later on in the series. I'm sure he's got a couple of lines about his experience that are super enlightening. While he waited. Like, he served. Yeah. He waited on prisoners. Later on in the story, he serves other people in other ways. And it's a great reminder to us to what we're called to regardless of our circumstances. And like you've mentioned a couple of times already in the series, it's just such a beautiful picture of some of the ways that we can reframe parts of our lives regardless of what's going on around us so that we stay locked into what God has called us to.
Yeah, to my fault, like, I don't like to wait, and I wonder if in the unwillingness or in an attempt to structure our time to where we don't have to wait, where we're digitally submitting orders and we're digitally standing in line and we're doing all this kind of stuff, you have to assume that we might be missing some opportunities for engagement, for conversations with people, that kind of stuff. The whole, like, wow, God brought us into line together and you didn't know the person. So with that, Joseph is one of those stories that reminds you, like, wow, shoot, like, maybe everything that plays out in my life isn't just like coincidental or bad timing kind of stuff. It's a divine appointment. Like, oh, I'm waiting. I think it's one of the cues to, like, when you realize I'm waiting, what do I do? And that's why I thought this part of his story, it's not just, because sometimes we'll interpret this story as all about dreams. It's all, the whole storyline is dreams, dreams, dreams.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you can spend, God still communicates through dreams, all that. I'm not, but I think you miss out on a major subject line there of what he was doing while he sat in jail, prison, whatever you want to call it, the pit, as he calls it.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? And he teaches me something, that not to just like lament the whole time. It's okay to lament.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But not like making that everything. And so he just served. One of my favorite phrasings, I brought it up in the sermon, is that he saw them. I think that's something profound, that I want to be that kind of a person. I've got people in my life who I think are amazing at seeing others. Hmm. I want to be good like that.
Yeah.
And I think while we're waiting, it's really hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I think one of the lessons you got to learn that is waiting actually teaches you to be available. And so you think, like, with that, he would have, if he was constantly trying to look out at how to get out of prison, he wouldn't have looked for that opportunity to help those guys.
Yeah.
And so I think of it now, like, I can see myself, and I think there's even been studies that have been done on this, like, we actually don't sit on our front porch and just wait to kind of interact with our neighbors mm-hmm. anymore. That's not a thought process. Like, it's just that kind of waiting and some, like, no, I'm busy. I got things to go get done. We've got schedules to get to. Like, we don't wait in that sense anymore mm-hmm. to where we could build a relationship with a neighbor. It has to be like, oh, I've got this project. You want to do it with me? Instead of just, hey, I'm actually at home. I'm just going to sit out on my front porch and see who's around. We just don't do that. And even now, I take my kids out to eat.
Yeah.
They're like, why is it taking so long to get the food?
Oh, yeah.
Like, dude, like,
they're cooking.
We just sat down. Yeah. I don't remember having that thought as a kid. I thought it was just so exciting to go out to eat.
Yeah, that's funny.
And sit and engage with the whole thing. And I'm not saying, like, I was great at engaging with my parents, but, like, you had just, hey, I was available at that time. We just don't think that way. Even, prime example, commercials with my kids. Like, they're like, what? Why is this happening?
Like, and I love it. They don't even call them commercials. They're ads to them.
Yes.
And then they're like dumbfounded.
Right.
That there's any time ever in your life that you have to watch and wait on an ad.
That's so funny.
So think, I mean, we're in this now too. We experience that. We don't want to wait in anything. So then it gives no room for relationships or availability for relationships to be built. Mm-hmm. And so, serving's going to be not even a thought.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, that's not what I've got other things to do. And so there's just something about waiting that's like, God goes, yeah, I'm going to make it happen in your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go sit at the DMV for a little bit. It's okay.
Just sit.
Like,
but even it's funny, even while we wait now, you have like a device in your pocket.
Yeah, right. Even always. They talk about like going out to dinner now is like, say the three of us, how many times would we hop on our phone and people having to go like, hey, let's actually put these somewhere else so that we'll focus in on dinner. So it's a unique conversation that I think we struggle with more than we'd like to admit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think there's so many ways we can distract and keep ourselves busy. And, we are, in addition to not loving to wait, we're a part of a culture that is like dedicated to overpacking our schedules as it is. So mm-hmm. It's like even in these kind of natural, maybe even God-given opportunities to like sit and just do nothing for a little bit, even in those opportunities, we do find a way to distract ourselves or to avoid what God may be trying to teach us and that sort of thing. So, it really interesting conversation to be having within the Joseph story, especially. As you, David, were prepping for this message, what other thoughts did you have that maybe we didn't have time to really dig into? What was left on the table in the message?
If I had a part two, I would take, I have it here in my notes, John 13. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So just stop there. It tells you what's on his mind. I mean, there's a lot on his mind. This is if you don't, aren't the storyline right now, and what I'm reading to you is he's about to walk through the whole process of salvation for us, crucifixion, resurrection, then days after all that. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal. So it's like with that like weighty hello. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. So if I had a part two, we would just spend a lot of time right there about how Jesus, despite what was going on in his mind, we even know that. I mean, he goes to the garden, and it's like, hey, so if this cup can go anywhere else, I mean, if there's a different option here, if we, there's just a lot of weight. There's a lot going on, and Jesus, I think, there's multiple reasons he does this. One of them is to display to them, to show them what he's doing and what they are to do with the rest of their lives. And so, I think one of the profound things is, and I'm preaching this to myself right now, that while life doesn't go exactly the way we want to, and you might call it a waiting season or even just a flat out difficult season, don't like minimize the potential power of pushing service into that time. Yeah. Of like, what do I do with it? Sure, healing is often a part of stuff like that, getting wise counsel, making decisions, making a strategy, all that's important. But oftentimes we minimize the window of serving and we think, okay, when I get a little bit more time, a little bit more resource, a little bit more on top of my thing that I'm going, when I get more energy, and what I'm finding is when we serve, we go into this whole other realm of what life is really about. And Jesus washes their feet, not just washes their feet, like uses his own clothing to do it. And you can go with all the details, how gross that would have been to do all of that. And so I think that we've got to be if we're followers of Jesus Christ and we're really trying to classically run from zero, mm-hmm. all right? So how are you serving? How are you taking what you've got in your own life, not what you wish you had, and just figuring out how to meet the needs of other people in a symbolic way, but also I think in an absolutely practical way. where it's not just being nice. It's practically knowing your neighbor well enough. What do they need? Mm. All that kind of stuff. So if the church were as good at serving other people as we are about voicing our opinions or at communicating truth, which truth should be communicated. But I think we often do not strive to be aggressively, intentionally, sacrificially serving kind of people. And I think Jesus gives us the model over and over and over and over. I mean, I referenced some scripture in the sermon, but over and over, serve, 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 serve. He served. He was a ransom. He was a servant. He was a slave. Paul, though I am free, 1 Corinthians 9:19, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone. Mm-hmm. Why? To win as many as possible.
Yeah.
And so that would be part two, is like, this just keep like drilling into a life of serve, 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 serve.
Hmm. That's really good. I love that text from Paul, because I think we are fairly non-committal people, like generally speaking. We don't like to like register for things or sign up for things or commit ourselves to like going and doing things typically until last minute. Some people differ from that a little bit and actually like to be fully prepared. But I think a lot of the times we are hesitant to like really lock in plans until later on, because we don't necessarily want to, like, what if something else comes up? What if there's another thing? But when within this concept of Paul saying, hey, I've made myself a slave so that I might win as many as possible. I think often those decisions are premeditated. It isn't, sometimes it's, I got a random phone call and someone needs me to help change their oil.
Sure.
I can do that. Oftentimes though, it's like, okay, where's the margin in my schedule to where I can serve, to where I can help a friend do this thing that I know they really could probably use some help with. Again, sometimes it's spur of the moment, last minute. But I think just like throughout the rest of Paul's life that we see over and over again is these faithful decisions that he makes, the decision to go when the Holy Spirit tells him to go, to move on to the next city, to continue to travel, to leave something that is good and growing and comfortable, to move into something where he knows he's going to be persecuted. All of these decisions aren't spur of the moment decisions. They are the expression of decisions he made a long time ago.
Yeah.
So for us, I wonder how we can begin to build our lives around, hey, the decision I'm making today is to be faithful in service of others so that I might win as many people as possible within our mission. I wonder how we start to lay the foundation of that sort of lifestyle today, so that when we are presented with opportunities to dig in and serve and to provide real value for people who may or may not know Jesus, we're ready and we know it's, oh, that's an easy yes, I can jump in. How do you guys think about that when it comes to just like building a life around this service?
I was taught a while ago regarding parenting that be cautious about what you teach your kids as optional. Like what you're displaying as, yeah, this is optional. This is, if we can, if we want to, maybe it's optional. Because what they'll translate, every generation does this, they'll cut it down one level. So when they become, is they'll treat what you treated as optional as something that's unnecessary. And so you really, in our home, we pay attention to, what are we displaying as an optional choice based on whatever reason it is? It's just optional. It's not absolutely necessary and needed. Mm-hmm. So in our home, just in the practical sense, is we regularly talk about things in life that must be necessary and true in your life, whether you are in the mood to, whether you have the time to, whether you have the money to, all that kind of stuff, is what do we want to make sure that we're like engaging as this is so important, and it's actually, we deem it as necessary for us to thrive in this life that God has given us. And so serving is one of those things that we don't want to have in our home as going, well, if we happen to get enough time and the right thing compels us to do so, well, then we might do it.
Yeah.
Where in our home, like, no, this is actually a necessary part. So just to give you real like home talk from us is each of our kids at certain stages of their life, we talk to them about, hey, this church that we go to, this can't just be like mom and dad's church. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to treat this as like an optional thing. And so as soon as you're outside of the home, it's going to become like, well, I mean, no big deal. So we talk to them about, how do you want to make this church your church? And how do we make this not just an optional thing that you're only here because mom and dad suggested that you be here? So we just go through the conversations, and it happens with serving. It happens with budgeting in conversations. It happens with exercise, all those types of things. It's like what's necessary, and be careful about what's optional. And there's a lot of things that should be optional that are way okay to be optional. But that's kind of one of the practical talks that we do in our home, really trying to pay attention to it.
That's good.
It is. We landed the plane yesterday, digging into like just heavy application. I mean, obviously this upcoming week for us is a massive opportunity for us to put into practice a life of service. So trying to pivot a little bit towards, hey, just very real life application. How do we, dedicate our lives to this type of service in the midst of whatever waiting we might experience? We talked, David, you talked a little bit about the history of Love Your Neighbor and why we do what we do in this area. And you guys have both been around for all of them, almost all of them, right?
Yep.
So just would love to hear, I wonder the fruit that has come out of that, not just even necessarily like church-wide, but just for you guys as you've walked through 17 of these now, what have you seen personally in like year after year just dedicating to, hey, we just want to be a church that, yeah, serves our community for this 1 week, but obviously it impacts our church in far more ways than just 1 week a year. Like it is a part of the DNA of Fountain Springs to try to serve our community and show people who Jesus is. So how have those experiences impacted you guys?
For me personally, I think sometimes as a pastor, you can argue in your head, like, man, if they just had the right information or they knew, then you'd be, this has been the number one way, I think, to reach lost people, is to serve them and be a part of a church that people look at and go, that church actually seems to care about me and the community I live in. And so, because that speaks to people.
Yeah.
And we know this, but when a church goes after it in a way that we have, then I go, and I'm not trying to say like, man, Fountain Springs is, but it's just has been one of the things that stood out to me. Like for me, I didn't grow up in a pastor's home. I didn't know what like the ingredients were to have a really healthy church. And so for me, this is one of those like, okay, this is some of that secret sauce. Like this, you have to have a mindset of how are we going out into the community and serving, and then how do you make that personal to where it's going, I'm not in my neighborhood by accident.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in this community by accident. So if my church is doing something, what am I doing to make that? Because I just don't want to be like, I'll just wait till my church does it. No, your neighbors need this. You're whatever you're a part of, how are you serving in that kind of capacity to help them?
Yeah.
So I think it's been and to see how it's impacted just how we're seen in the community. Because before, this church was not seen in a good.
Sure.
Did not have a great reputation at all. And the only reason I think God redeemed that is just because thank you for being faithful to serving others.
Hmm. Yeah. When you look, my mind is all over the place right now on, I think of what model we get from Jesus. For God so loved the world that he gave. Mm-hmm. And I think if you study scripture, look at the life of Jesus, but from beginning to end in the scripture, if you're going to love someone, it's got to move beyond lip service. Like I'm not suggesting that it's about earning and you always have to do all that kind of, but I am a profound believer in back up what you say and actually create such a reputation that you don't even have to say it, right? I don't want my kids or my wife or my friends to only know that I love them because I tell them that I love them. I really want to get good at a reputation of, David is praying for me. I know it. He's got a reputation of it. David is available. David is here. Like, David has done this or sacrificed that, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so Jesus did it. Scripture teaches it. And I think a church that truly wants to, almost every church I know, even if they're crazy churches, like we want to love people. Great. That the way to love people is not to affirm someone else's behavior, but it does require a level of sacrifice and generosity that's got to play out. And so Love Week, which was crazy, Love Week started with no budget, no option for budget. We as a church couldn't pay our bills. When I was told this after I took the job, but our church was considered the most toxic church in the entire denomination. I had no idea that, but that was told by people who don't live here, like, oh, we know about that church. So what I think what's beautiful about that, and I'm not trying to be condescending on anyone, but what's beautiful about that is the whole idea of excuses of I can't because, well, forget that. Like, you can start right now backing up and, in fact, maybe leading with your actions and letting your words simply complement actions and a reputation. So my heart as a pastor was, let's just start building a reputation that looks like Jesus. Let's just start working on it. Whether someone believes the reputation, accepts the reputation, that was not really a part of the conversation. We weren't trying to get people to like us, but it was like, well, what do we need to do? And we can't control the past, but we can control right now. We can do what we do now. So Love Week began to be this moment that we invited people in. How about serving your neighbor? And what I've seen is I've seen business people, school system folks who will take this as a moment to lead their own teams on how to take care of other people. So a lot of times you're in your work environment, you're in your office, or you're running your school and you know all that kind of stuff. But when you collectively lock shields, shoulder to shoulder, work with other people and serve other people, you begin to see life, I think, in a different way. It affects everything they do. And so we just started inviting people in where businesses, us, bosses, families, and say, hey, how about serving someone else that you don't know and that you won't benefit from? And the church will fund it. You know, you don't even got to do that. Whatever people give to the church, we'll use a portion of that to do this. And we saw people not just be served. That's cool. That's a whole subject there of someone being served. And we've talked to tons of people who were like, I was praying that God would step in and help me, and you guys were here. And we're like, wait, we didn't know you were praying that way. Nonprofits who are on the verge of where an executive director was on the verge of quitting. And they're like, no one cares about us. No one sees us. And a church steps in. We got you. We're going to help you organize stuff and be a part of that. Even in the sense of a church championing someone else's mission of helping foster kids or all that kind of stuff, we begin to go in and support people who are being served. What I have learned is there's two camera angles on this. There's let's look at the person being served, and it's amazing what they got provided for. But then there's a whole other camera angle on the person who's like, you're serving and you had no idea that you were about to have this moment with God where a collective group of people serving together.
Yeah.
Absolutely game changing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what it did is, at least for Fountain Springs Church, is it created a little bit of DNA in us that we are a people. I can't speak on behalf of other churches. Our church believes, like it's built into us, that we must be involved in other people's lives. That church is not inside of a building, a structure, and that's the existence of it, and we sit in seats and we do our thing inside of our building, and we're concerned with our building and our property, our facilities, all that kind of stuff, or just the people that we know. It's in our DNA that we should, like Joseph, we should see people. And a way to see people is to get involved in their needs. Jesus did this. Jesus filled bellies. Jesus healed skin conditions, eyeballs, ears, like just go through all bleeding. I mean, just go through all. He like went at their need and said, I'm going to engage your physical need. And so we as a church said, if Jesus thought engaging physical need would advance the good news of Jesus, we're in. Yep. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Paul, so to win as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. So if people want to know, like, are you doing that for an agenda? Yeah, we want you to know who Jesus is.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There was a book we read when we first got here that kind of, I think, started shaping it. It was Irresistible Influence.
The Church of Irresistible Influence. Good book.
And it was kind of like the thought, and it's not self-serving, it's more going after, if the mission is for people to know Jesus, then why would we not go after having an influence that points them to that? And so that's like, if you were to close your doors, church, your house, wherever, would anybody care?
Yeah.
Jesus lived a life that people cared.
Yeah.
Like when he passed away, people cared. But then he rose from the grave and it changed everything for us too. And so that's why I go, we got to live those same kind of lives to where, hey, would my neighbors care? Would this community care if I were gone or if I left? And that's always been a good challenging question to me because I go, God goes, I put you here on purpose. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, we talked a little bit earlier to pre-recording about some industries that have like that are known for service, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like service industry type experiences. And I don't know if you guys have had experiences at a restaurant or at a hotel where it's like, man, that was I feel well served. I feel seen, yeah. Right?
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A.
They have long lines, but they've been brilliant in how they make you feel like it's not that long.
You've got like, you know, Ritz-Carlton historically is known for its service, so much so that Ritz-Carlton employees are allotted up to $1,000 per guest to make it a special experience if they have an opportunity to, right? Which for some of them could be as much as the stay costs, right? Disney, right? We think of the five senses approach that Disney takes, where it's like, the moment that you walk onto a Disney property, they're so intentional, like the post painter, like we've heard all of the stories where they've got all of these incredibly intentional, they make these decisions to engage all of your senses, your smell, your taste, your feel, your sight, all of these things. They're incredibly intentional about it because they're motivated to create a great experience. Because if they're able to create a great experience, you're likely to come back and spend more money at Disney or spend more money at the hotel that you like or whatever it might be, the restaurant. It's a fine motivation. How much more so, though, should we be motivated to engage with people and make them feel known and seen and loved, given that our motivation is like actually eternal? Given that the mission that we're on, that God has given us, is, hey, I want you to reach lost people, right? Go make disciples, baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything I've commanded. Like, that's this mission we're on. And we know there are eternal consequences, both positive and negative, to that mission. If that's our motivation, then man, the church should set the standard. Mm-hmm. For service, for experience, for making people feel known and loved and seen. Absolutely. That's the type of church that I think we strive to be and the type of people that we strive to be.
It's what launched, you know, the whole concept of, well, if someone's coming to church that for the first time, they might be nervous. I mean, I would be, right? Yeah. So what if we help them get their car parked where they don't have to wonder where to park? Or we even have spots just like, hey, if you're brand new, you can park here. We just saved you a spot. Like, hey. And what if we just were there holding the door open for them? Like, where you go up to a door that's closed in a building you've never been to, if someone's just there holding the door open for you, you kind of feel like, yeah, I'm in the right place. This isn't closed. And then what if someone helps you find a seat? Or what if someone says, oh, you've got kids? You know that we have an incredible kids ministry? And would your kids love to just have some fun, play some games, sing some fun songs, hear about Jesus? And it's why we as a church try to actually just pay attention to other people. That's all we're doing. We're not, there's no like secret agenda. It's we think people matter. So we want to move that more than just a thought. Mm-hmm. More than just a, where I would affirm that in a conversation. Oh yeah, I think people matter too. Yeah. No, I want to display it.
Yep.
And we've got businesses, I think, outpacing the church on helping people feel valued. So one might say, well, their motivation is money.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have a higher calling. Mm-hmm. So my motivation is that you would know who Jesus is. So you can have your motivation. I got mine. I want you to know who Jesus is. And Jesus taught me that if I engage needs and I make sure that you know that you're valuable, you might actually believe you're valuable mm-hmm. because of Jesus. So it becomes something that I've learned like a ton from Disney to the exhaustive details that they go to mm-hmm. to make sure you don't even have a problem with stuff. Like you spill on your shirt, here's a new shirt.
Right.
Come from a foreign country, here's someone who speaks your language. They'll mm-hmm. give you a tour all day long. All that kind of stuff. I'm like, man, and 70% of, it was the last stat I heard, 70% of people who go to the Magic Kingdom go back.
Mm. Yeah. I wonder in that, a question that's been rolling around in my head the last couple of minutes here is, when was the last time we were willing to be inconvenienced? Like we started the podcast actually talking about convenience, talking about not liking to wait because it's inconvenient.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to flip that on its head from our standpoint, knowing that we're called to serve others, when was the last time we were willing to be inconvenienced for the sake of service? Was the last time we were willing to cancel plans we were looking forward to because something came up and we needed to jump in on it and friends were moving and we needed help or a pipe burst and I can fix it. Okay. I'll be there in 20 minutes, whatever. And I think again, we are a people that flee from inconvenience anytime
sure.
we get the opportunity to. In a lot of ways, that's probably a good thing. However, this is one of those areas. I spent some time in pseudo hospitality service at the first ministry I served at. It was a pretty great, I think, a great camp. So we had people coming all the time, these groups, these different churches that we wanted to serve really well. So I spent a lot of time digging into, what's the industry standard? Obviously, this is camp. It's not a hotel. It's a different environment. But what's the industry standard on some of this customer service stuff? Because from the same vantage point, we had a very kingdom-minded mission. And if you're served well at a Ritz-Carlton, how much more known and loved should you feel going to this camp, right? That was our mindset. And I remember hearing this story one time about a guy who leads a business and they go to this restaurant all the time, right? They spend thousands and thousands of dollars, having business meetings at this restaurant a year. And it was right around the time where there was that craze where restaurants were putting fried eggs on top of a burger. Like whenever that started, 15 years ago or whenever it started becoming really popular. So he goes to this restaurant and he was like, hey, one of the people in the party, big business meal, was like, hey, that burger looks awesome. I notice you guys serve breakfast as well. Is it possible to get a fried egg on top of that burger? And the waiter was like, hey, let me ask. I'll go back to the kitchen. Let me ask. So goes back to the kitchen, comes back out. Hey, I'm so sorry. We can't do that. Oh, well, can I get just a side of an egg? And she's like, yeah, they're not going to let us do that because the eggs are reserved for breakfast food, the breakfast menu. And because we're serving lunch now, we can't make you an egg. He's like, well, if I go next door, there's a Whole Foods. If I were to buy a carton of eggs, would you be willing to fry one up? And they're like, yeah, they're not going to do that for you. So it's over and over again, trying to solve this problem. But no, there was some sort of system or something got in the way of being able to say yes to that request. So the next time they go out for a business meal, there happened to be a restaurant inside of the Whole Foods that was right next to this other restaurant, a little pizza restaurant. So they go over to this Whole Foods and they're all sitting down. They order some pizzas and just the CEO of the company, just for kicks and giggles, asks the waiter, hey, that pizza looks awesome. Could you fry an egg and put it on top of the pizza? And they were like, we don't serve breakfast. We don't have eggs, but yeah, let's try to figure it out. So, of course, they're in a grocery store. The guy, server walks over, grabs a carton of eggs, pays for the carton of eggs, brings it back to the restaurant, throws a fried egg on top. Of course, it was inconvenient. It probably took him a couple of minutes to walk out, do the thing. Hey, can you fry an egg? Sure, we'll figure it out. How are we going to do that in a pizza restaurant, but that in and of itself, being willing to be inconvenienced for the sake of, oh yeah, I think we can knock that out. That's not an unreasonable question to ask, or this isn't an unreasonable project for me to jump in on. I've got some margin. This is more important. Being willing to say that yes, in this context, you know, they were no longer going to that other restaurant, and now they are a customer for life at this Whole Foods pizza chain or whatever it is. That same level of engagement, like power behind engagement or influence, how much more is that true within our lives when we're willing to be temporarily inconvenienced for something that matters so much more than the hour or two we're going to spend doing whatever God's calling us to do?
I think that requires a lot of trust in the Lord, because I think even Joseph's story, you know, he's leading the prison. At some point, you ever wondered, like, did he think about just escaping? Like, he's managing it all. Could have been easy to have been like, hey, you guys do this. I'm going to. But he stays in it, especially even after the cupbearer. And, like, there's a one I was just kind of studying, just theologian kind of pointing out. He's like, what if Joseph wouldn't have been there? Cupbearer says, hey, Pharaoh, I got this guy. I just remembered him. And they go, I think he's in prison. They go to the prison. He's not here. He would have missed that opportunity to where God was leading. So sometimes it's we don't know what God's doing in the midst of that. And we just got to trust, like, okay, Joseph didn't want to be in prison, but he waded through that and got the timing that God wanted to set all this up in place. And so if he would have tried to fast track that, or tried to do it on his own, he would have missed the opportunity that just the right timing. Pharaoh has his dream, God's setting all this up, and he's where he needs to be in that time. So I do think there's just some of those, like, great points of all where, yes, serving in the midst of all that, but also just trusting that this is where God wants me, although I don't like it. It's very inconvenient, but this is where God has me right now, and am I willing to wait until my circumstances may change?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Well, as we wrap it up here, let's spend the last couple of minutes. Todd, tell us about Love Your Neighbor Week. Tell us about how people can sign up. I know we're in it right now. Mm-hmm. So how do, you know, if someone maybe is new to it, hasn't yet planned on serving and is now feeling deeply convicted by this conversation to jump in and serve, how do they go about doing that?
I'd recommend going to the website or app and signing up, so that way we can be prepared for you. Now, could you just show up? Sure, but that's not the best.
It is very helpful to know that you're coming.
You're coming. And if you're like, well, okay, what projects are we doing? Well, let's go back to kind of the conversation we're having. Sometimes it's just about showing up, and then you can kind of pick your projects there. So when you sign up, it'll be picking time slots of, like, can you do it from 9 to 1, or can you do it in the evening from like a 5 or 6 to 9 kind of deal? And so those would be the times you signed up for. You show up. And then you can pick a project that we have going on that day.
Perfect.
Or for that section, and just hop in. And I think one of the blessings that comes out of it is you being able to also connect with other people within your church. I've always found throughout all the years I've done this, just being able to be like, man, it's cool that we did that tile project together. We did this thing together. And so it just creates some unity that you didn't know you needed in the church. And so those are just other ones I think that can come from it. But that's the easy way to do and step into this.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got an evening, if you got a day off of work, or you take one, there you go.
Yep. fs.church/events. You can get the registration there.
It'll probably be on the main thing of our website, but also app. It's right there.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it. And we'll see you again next week.
Sounds good.
Well, hey, we're so grateful again that you would join us for today's episode here on the Run From Zero podcast. And remember, if you want to join us for any of our service opportunities throughout Love Your Neighbor Week, which is happening this week, then we hope that you go to either the Fountain Springs Church app or fs.church/events and register before you show up. It helps our team know how many projects we need for that specific day and all of the details that go along with you jumping in and serving our community all week long. So be sure to sign up, and man, we hope we see you out there. Thanks again for joining us today, and we will see you again next week.